Professional wrestling, like real life, is full of surprises. Hi, everyone. It's Freddie Prinze Jr. And it's no surprise I can talk wrestling all day, any day. Kind of like how State Farm agents can talk insurance and help you choose the right coverage. When it comes to important insurance decisions, let State Farm support you with the coverage you need backed with 24/7 support. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Locatora Radio is a radiophonic novela,
which is just a very extra way of saying
a podcast.
I'm Diosa FM.
And I am Mala Munoz.
Locatora Radio is your prima's favorite podcast, hosted by us, Mala and Diosa.
We're two IG friends turned podcast partners, breaking down pop culture, feminism, sexual wellness, and offering fresh takes on trending topics through nuanced interviews with up-and-coming Latinx creatives.
Known as Las Locatoras, Las Mamis of Myth and Bullshit, and Las Podcasteras Peligrosas, we were podcasting independently since 2016, but joined iHeartMedia's My Cultura Network in 2022.
This year, we're continuing to share stories from the Latinx community para todo el mundo.
Welcome to Season 8.
Are you listening?
Hola, hola, locamores. Welcome to Season 8 of Locatora Radio. I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
You're tuning in to capítulo 179.
Last time on Locatora Radio, we interviewed Jasmine Maldonado, founder of Persona The Shop. Go ahead and tune into that episode, leave us a review, share with a friend, and subscribe to Locatora Radio.
So today we have a pretty intense episode. This is a deep one. This is we've been waiting to do this one. We needed the time, we needed the research, and so we're going to be talking about the state of affairs in the world as best as we can, but we'll be doing so with a journalist and really focusing on misinformation and social media in this conversation.
The last time we briefly touched upon Israel-Palestine, we suggested that folks not turn to celebrities or influencers or Instagram graphics for their takes and for their perspectives and for their background, which is why we're inviting on a journalist, Jean Guerrero, to give us some context and perspective on specifically misinformation online as it relates to Israel-Palestine. A few weeks ago, we received the news over here stateside that Hamas bombed Israel. Since October 7th, 7,000 civilians have been killed in Gaza due to Israeli airstrikes. Of those 7,000, more than 2,900 have been children, 24 journalists, 61 teachers, 35 United Nations staff. And these numbers, according to the Washington Post.
Those numbers continue to rise, right, as we do our research, as things are reported out. And we're also have been noticing, you know, in the U.S., of course, when people voice their opinions or people voice their support in particular of Palestine, they have been losing job opportunities, have been resigning from jobs. And so just a couple examples, Javier Zamora, author of New York Times bestselling memoir Solito, was uninvited from a panel for voicing his support of Palestine.
And Javier Zamora is not the only one that seems to be experiencing some type of professional repercussions for support of Palestine. We also have examples of folks like CAA agent Maha Dakhil, who recently resigned from the internal board at CAA. But we're seeing Israeli people and those who are in support of ending airstrikes in Gaza receiving negative backlash in the public sphere.
We mentioned like not to listen or not to seek out influencers, right, or celebrities for your information or news. But I did want to point out, like, Bella Hadid obviously is a model. She's Palestinian, and she has been vocal in the Free Palestine movement in support of it. And she's been receiving death threats. And so we share this to contextualize the consequences of showing your support for Palestine and how this relates to free thinking, critical thinking, media literacy, lack thereof of media literacy, and how we can combat it as we consume news, how we can be more mindful with the things that we share, because we all share things, influencer or not. If you're a person online, you're probably sharing. If you care about different causes, you're going to be sharing things.
And in addition, you know, the Free Palestine movement is not a recent movement. This is something that has been going on for the past 50 years. There have been Students for Justice and Palestine chapters at universities across the country for a long time. Certainly when I was an undergrad, SJP was around. And so I think part of it, too, is look to the movement that has been going on for several decades now. The thought leaders, the activists, the writers, the journalists, the Palestinians who have been talking about this issue, not necessarily like someone who got a million followers in the last 6 months. You know what I mean? As like now posting about it is more the perspective we're coming from.
Yeah. I mean, Angela Davis has been writing about Palestine for most of her career. Different collectives, feminist collectives over the years, over the decades that have been writing about Palestine, have been thinking and supporting Palestinian folks. And also, because you mentioned SJP, I did also want to mention that, you know, students from across the country in their SJP chapters are being doxxed, are losing their jobs. And something to keep in mind is these are 20-something student leaders. So we can have celebrities, we can have professional folks, sure, losing opportunities, but we're having 20-something-year-olds being doxxed. So this is happening more and more.
Absolutely. And in putting this episode together, you know, we were reaching out to different folks to see who could we bring on, who could we interview. And I asked a journalist friend of ours, you know, who are your recommendations as far as Palestinian journalists who might be available, able, willing to speak on the topic? And sort of what we were finding is there are plenty of Palestinian journalists out there who right now are very booked. They're on CNN. They're on the major news stations. They're on the ground. They're talking about the issue and what's going on. But you also have a number of Palestinian journalists, writers, thinkers who are not necessarily able or comfortable or safe to speak on these issues publicly or on the record for fear of whatever potential consequences might come their way. So if you're asking, why don't we have a Palestinian journalist on today's episode? Well, that's one of the reasons why. So thus, Jean, we're very excited to have her. She's been writing on this issue recently for the LA Times. She has a column. So after the episode, make sure to go and read some of her writing about misinformation and how to really kind of disentangle all the different interests, all the conflicting interests that are involved in this issue.
Yeah, and next week we will be joined by two guests, one of them Palestinian, to talk about the crisis and war crimes in Palestine, and they have a podcast as well. So we'll be talking more about that next week. But in the meantime, we're super excited to have on Jean Guerrero. We've been following her work for years, and she's an opinion columnist at the LA Times. Her writing has been featured in Vanity Fair, Politico, The Nation, Wired, and The New York Times, and The Washington Post, and everywhere, basically. She's originally from San Diego and a graduate of USC and Goucher College. This past week, she published an article titled, "Horrific Social Media Post About the Israel-Hamas War: Show How Being Online Ruins Independent Thinking. Can We Fix It?"
As an actor, a producer, and a proud Latino father, my days can get very busy, which is why I make sure to dedicate time to what's important, like supporting my community through my work, sharing my Colombian and Venezuelan culture, and being present for my family, which is everything to me. Hey everyone, it's Wilmer Valderrama, and we're reflecting on what matters most. I start by giving thanks for good support in my life whenever I need to make the big decisions. How about you? If it's insurance you need, State Farm is there to help you choose the right coverage for you. And State Farm offers great support 24/7. Just call an agent. State Farm is also a big supporter of My Cultura podcast network by helping to share our Latinx voices. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jean Guerrero, columnist, journalist, writer at the LA Times, thank you so much for joining us today. Can you please say hello and introduce yourself for our listeners?
Hi, great to be here. My name is Jean Guerrero, and I'm a columnist at the LA Times. I write mostly about politics, threats to democracy, disinformation, and grew up on the border in San Diego and covered immigration issues under the Trump administration.
And Jean, you cover all kinds of topics in your column, from dating and who splits the bill to now talking about misinformation and the horrific social media posts about the Israel-Hamas war that people are seeing online, and what that is illustrating about the American public's ability to think freely and independently. So I would love for us to talk to you specifically about that article as it relates to Israel and Hamas.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about it. I'll just preface by saying I'm not, by any stretch of the imagination, an expert on the Israel-Hamas war. So I wouldn't feel comfortable commenting on the particularities of how people should be processing it, but I can absolutely talk about why people on social media seem to be adopting an extremely harmful and black or white framing that I don't think is conducive to peace or any constructive progress on this issue.
Jean, I'm curious, was there one particular post or a series of posts or a pattern that sparked this idea for you to talk about the misinformation as it relates to the Israel-Palestine issue? Like, was there something specific that you saw that moved you to write this column?
Yeah, I mean, I was on Instagram and I was just noticing that the people who were appearing in my feed were either super, super pro-Israel and not expressing any empathy or concern about the lives of Palestinian civilians, or they were super pro-Palestinian to the point of rationalizing or even cheering on the horrific deaths that we saw as a result of Hamas going into Israel and killing so many people in these brutal ways. So I was noticing it was either one way or the other way, and I wasn't seeing any nuance or complexity in the discussion. And I started talking to my friends and found that they were experiencing similar things on social media. If they leaned more in the Palestinian direction, their social media feeds tended to be more populated by these just horrible videos of the violence being committed against Palestinians by the Israeli government, and vice versa. People who were super pro-Israel were tending to see videos of the children who were taken hostage by Hamas and the people who were killed by Hamas. And I realized we were all experiencing completely different realities and were unable to, it was just another example of how a lot of people just were unable to have conversations about this very important issue because we were all seeing entirely different realities and so many of us just continue to not be able to understand one another because we're not seeing the same reality. Literally, we're seeing entirely different realities on our feeds.
Right. And that's part of how the algorithm is created. I mean, I would definitely be on the side of social media where everyone is pro-Palestine, you know, free Palestine movement. And so what I'm seeing is very different than, say, someone in the opposite, quote, opposite side. But the way the social media algorithm is created, that's where we exist online. And you reference this really great quote by Naomi Klein about the more we exist online, the more privacy and autonomy we lose. So can you talk more about that as someone that's both online for work, maybe for personal reasons too, and consuming all of this news?
Yeah, I mean, this great quote she says is how we're all becoming individuals not guided by legible principles or beliefs, but acting as members of groups, playing yin to the other's yang, well versus weak, awake versus sheep, righteous versus depraved, binaries where thinking once lived. And I just thought that was so insightful because I do believe that the way that the algorithms operate, they're encouraging us to increasingly think in terms of binaries instead of complexities. Literally, we're starting to think like in zeros and ones, like the coding in computers, and are losing what I think makes us human and becoming more like automatons, like robots, which is what these algorithms are intended to do, because the more that we think in these reductionistic ways, the more susceptible we become to manipulation. And these algorithms are designed to do that. The tech companies gather all kinds of information about us, the most intimate details of our lives. Every click, view, and search online is harvested from us to create these user profiles that are sold to data brokers that are then sold to corporations who want to sell us things, to campaigns who want to affect the way that we vote and the way that we see the world and the way that we see other people. So we're increasingly losing our free will. And the way Naomi Klein talks about it in her amazing new book, Doppelganger, is these digital profiles that are being created of us are she calls them digital doubles. We're losing our autonomy and our free will to these digital doubles that are kind of like these virtual voodoo dolls that get constructed out of our online behavior and can then be used. I mean, they're sold, like I said, to corporations, campaigns, and anyone who wants to influence what we believe, how we behave. And those doubles are used to nudge our behavior in real life. They use our fantasies, our fears, our deepest vulnerabilities, our biases, our proclivities to inform how they can best take advantage of us, you know, in moments of darkness, in moments of weakness. I mean, the amount of things that they know about us is astounding. They know if we're going through a divorce. They know if we're, they know who we're sleeping next to. They know what time we wake up in the morning. They know how fast we walk. They know what facial expressions we're making. And all of this is just such an incredible amount of information that they have on us that whether we think we're susceptible or not, we are. The more time that we spend online, the more we lose our free will to these companies that have access to that information.
I also want to ask about the sentence. In the days since the Israel-Hamas war began, our collective loss of these things is conspicuous on social media, where many of us are recycling the one-sided takes of bots. And I think this point is so important. Whether it's on Instagram, TikTok, X, formerly Twitter, sometimes the posts that you see going super viral and the pages that you see like posting tons of memes or whatever, I don't think that we always sit back and realize that there are not necessarily human beings running the pages or generating the post. We're at this place in social media and in our economy where a lot of people and brands and companies have paid to like have pages, right, and accounts that they don't necessarily have to manually run, but they can like run themselves, you know? And so I'm wondering about the place of bots and like meme pages in all of this, where it's like not even necessarily human beings influencing other human beings directly.
Exactly. I'm so glad you bring that up because there's so much disinformation going around about this war, and a lot of it is being spread by bots that then, because of how viral the content goes, ordinary people begin to recycle, retweet, and just spread that information. And it just creates this ripple effect of people just not understanding what is really going on. And the people who are behind those bots, those accounts, are often foreign actors who are using social media as a weapon of psychological warfare that is intended to pit us all against each other so that we can't talk to each other and we can't, you know, we can't address the real issues that we're facing, whether it's in our country or abroad. And they're chipping away at our capacity for civil discourse and eroding our democracy. This is a tool of psychological warfare that is being used in that way. But also just anybody within the United States who has an interest in us talking past each other and not understanding what's going on, you know, within the military industrial complex, people who just want to profit off of our sale of weapons and such overseas. I mean, those are other people who have an interest in spreading disinformation and causing us to not be able to talk about this in a way that's constructive.
That's such a great point, and I think leads to this question about propaganda, right? A lot of us have been seeing the propaganda language, right, being used when talked about Palestinians. They're being regarded as, quote, animals, unhuman, subhuman. And so how do we, you know, filter the propaganda, the disinformation, while also holding in mind there's a genocide happening? And so how are we carrying those two? We're sure for one side of the aisle, it may seem like we're speaking in extreme ways, but this is the reality of Palestinian journalists, Palestinian civilians reporting on the ground. So how do we carry all of that as just like average citizens that want to be informed?
I just think it's so important for us to remember that the minute that we lose our theory of mind for the other, the minute that we lose our capacity to put ourselves in the shoes of the perceived other, we risk becoming exactly what we're condemning. And so I've been trying to talk to people within my social circle who I've seen posting what I believe to be like extremely dangerous and toxic views, and be like, just call out the fact that, like, okay, you think these people are monsters, you think these people are animals, but like, how can you then distinguish yourself from this perceived other if you too are like surrendering your capacity for empathy and for having a theory of mind of the other, and for seeing other people as human? Like, I think what one of the most beautiful, powerful and unique things about the human species that distinguishes us from other animals is that our brains can explore the liminal spaces of uncertainty and contradiction and complexity. And we have mirror neurons that allow us to empathize with people who are very different from us, and to cultivate a theory of mind for others, which enables us to have conversations and co-create and collaborate on extraordinary feats. And this is a gift that I don't think we realize how much of it we are losing to our digital economy and surveillance capitalism. And I just think that I think we need to keep the conversation focused on what is happening to our brains, because we're all being made victims here. And people who we see who are saying and believing outrageous, horrific things and contributing to the problem, I think that if we approach them with a little bit of empathy and understanding as well, and try to have conversations about why perhaps they're being misled or manipulated, and try to give people the benefit of the doubt, I think that is going to be a much more constructive way to be able to change people's hearts and change people's minds and allow them to de-radicalize and understand that, like, at the end of the day, what matters is protecting human lives. And right now, that's not happening. Right now, I mean, we all know what's happening. It's just beyond words. And I think that the only way we're going to stop this is if we're able to convince some of the people who have been manipulated into dehumanizing Palestinians into understanding what's happening in their own minds, and how their digital tools are being weaponized against them, without condescending, without patronizing, just trying to be like, look, we're all victims of this. I think those are the conversations that we need to be having, because I don't think people realize the extent to which they're literally just being manipulated on a constant basis. And the reality that they're seeing on their devices is tailored to exploit their deepest fears and biases, and we need to be empathetic to the fact that everyone is being made a victim of these technologies, and we need to figure out how we can collectively guide ourselves out and regain our autonomy and our capacity for universal empathy, and find ways to pressure our governments to be better and to not fund genocide.
Thank you so much for all of that, for sharing all of your insight.
I often get asked why I'm such a big fan of wrestling, and it's all thanks to my grandma. Growing up, we would watch matches together, and that bond turned me into a lifelong fan. Hi, I'm Freddie Prinze Jr., and on my podcast, Wrestling with Freddie, we know how important it is to have the right teammate, because things can get pretty tricky quick. So, when things get complicated and you need help, State Farm gives you options. They show you what's possible for ensuring what matters to you. One of the things that matters to me? Sharing memories and revisiting wrestling's greatest moments. And with State Farm's support of the My Cultura podcast network, I get to do just that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think that our audience tends to be predominantly Latinas. And I think that a lot of our audience has come from maybe a Catholic background or some type of a Christian background. And speaking for myself, you know, when you grow up Catholic, there is a sort of there is an emphasis on Israel and Bethlehem and the Promised Land and all of that. And something we've been doing on our show is encouraging our listeners who tend to be Latinas, right, not to get all of their news from social media, to not look to celebrities and to not look to influencers, especially with regards to this issue in particular. And I'm wondering if you have suggestions for our audience on where they can look instead of looking to Instagram posts and influencers and social media. Where can they go to get more perspective on the issue?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. And I just encourage people to I feel like I can't generalize. Well, okay, first of all, I used to work in public media. I came to the LA Times from KPBS, which is the NPR and PBS station in San Diego. So I always encourage people to support and to turn to public media in times of crisis to understand what is happening in our world, because public media is the least likely to be affected, or one of the least likely to be affected by corporate interests and just much more likely to be, I don't want to say objective or impartial, because I feel like those terms are so loaded now. But I do think that they try to approach things, NPR, PBS NewsHour, they try to approach things with real nuance and consideration of the facts, and not let certain interests affect the way that they cover things. And obviously I work at the LA Times. I think we have amazing journalists here and who are doing great work on this issue. There's so many publications to choose from, and not all of them are consistently great on, especially on foreign affairs. But I do encourage people to just seek out. There's always certain journalists at every at almost every journalistic organization whose work is worth following. And I encourage people to make their own decisions based on assessing like who are the best journalists at these various publications, who are on the ground whenever possible, or who actually demonstrate an interest in informing the public versus just in just versus like furthering divisions and disinformation.
Yeah, I love that. Definitely support public media. I want to ask you about independent thinking in general and creating more space for it. A lot of us have gravitated to the digital space, especially if we're a millennial or Gen Z. A lot of us haven't known a time without the internet, right? Or without social media. Like, we talk about that all the time. Like, we met online. I remember when I made my first AIM account, my first MySpace. Like, we've been online for so long. It makes me wonder, like, is it even possible to create a space for independent thinking online? Is this something we need to move offline? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I do think that it's possible. I mean, well, first of all, I just want to say that whenever we fall into this adversarial us versus them binary way of thinking that our digital spaces encourage, we are less able to fight against, like, we're less able to fight for our common interests as the non-billionaire classes, because we're not able to talk to each other, we're not able to reach any form of compromise. And that's what these billionaires want. They want to protect the status quo. And whenever we start to attack each other instead of the systems that they are protecting, it strengthens the status quo, because we have like a form of paralysis. But to your question, I do think that there's a way for these digital spaces to embrace, for us within these digital spaces to embrace a more nonviolent form of communication that will encourage actual changes to take place in the real world. And I say nonviolent communication because this is one thing I've realized in recent years. I've just been challenged a lot. The more that I spend time offline, like in the real world, talking to people who have very different political views from me or just different experiences from me, I've realized that, like, because I've talked to a number of extremists, religious extremists, right-wing extremists who have become de-radicalized and who left extremism behind as a result of people communicating with them nonviolently, either in real life or in digital spaces. And I mean, there's an entire book, Nonviolent Communication, which I've written about before, which is really helpful for this. But also Reverend James Lawson here in Los Angeles, who is a close ally of Martin Luther King Jr. and who's still alive today. He's a leading theorist of nonviolence who teaches a class on nonviolence. And it's all about treating the perceived other, the person who we see as our adversary, as a fellow human being, and instead of our mortal enemy or an existential threat to our lives. Even if we feel that, even if we feel like their beliefs and their actions in the world are a threat to us and the people that we love, if we condemn them in violent language, no matter how true we believe that language to be, we're actually causing them to double down and losing the ability to potentially persuade them and change them. And I've talked to former extremists who have been changed by people speaking with them, speaking to them with empathy and with like just these nonviolent forms of communication. And even though they have not, these nonviolent forms of communication have not predominated in digital spaces, I do see them increasingly going viral. People like Alok Vaid Menon, who I wrote about, a non-binary activist who embraces love towards their towards the people who express hatred towards them. Love and empathy and humanity do go viral. I think so many of us are exhausted by hatred and adversarial thinking that we're increasingly likely to want these things. And so they do go viral. We need to model ways of being in digital spaces and in the real world that are revolutionary and contradictory to those that have been set in motion. And once these tech companies see that this is what we want, I hope and I do believe that they will be forced to change their business models.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Jean, for giving us and our listeners so much to chew on and so much to think about, especially as I think we all scroll aimlessly, you know, and we're clicking and we're liking and we're sharing. And I hope that this is a type of conversation that will really like give our listeners, you know, pause and really think about what it is that we're consuming and what we're sharing and what we're liking and what we're encouraging the algorithm to feed us more of.
Yeah, I do have a follow-up question. You know, obviously you're a columnist, so you write for a living. But just in general, you know, I wanted to ask you about, you know, because you have a column based on your opinion, right? What's your process for backing up your belief with research and supported arguments? Because even if someone is not a columnist, right, we all have our opinions, and how are we backing them up, right? And so how would you advise someone that has this belief, has this opinion, and how can they, you know, back that up in the way you do, but at their own level?
Well, so for every column that I write, I think I'm an outlier. Well, I don't want to say that because I'm not fully informed of everybody else's creative process as a columnist. But for every column, even if it's a short column, I talk to at least a dozen people. And often these are long conversations, like hour long conversations where I'm just, and I love these conversations because I'm just, I go to people who are experts on a subject that I intend to write about. And I call them and I pick their brains, and I don't even necessarily have a set list of questions. I want to hear what's interesting to them about this issue and just pick their brains in a sort of free flowing way. I feel like we have forgotten this art of deep, long, lingering conversations with each other. And that's what I love about you guys and podcasting in general, is it creates a space for us to really just dive deep and to explore the expertise of so many different people and the life experiences of different people. So just don't expect, I mean, obviously doing research and making sure that you're corroborating your sources and that they're reliable sources to the best of your knowledge, doing as much research as possible is great, but there's nothing that substitutes having conversations with people who have lived experience in the area that you're trying to understand, who've spent their lives or written entire books about certain subjects. So I do encourage people to try to have those conversations with people. If they don't have the time to seek people out on their own, then obviously listening to podcasts, long form interviews online are great as well. But I just think it's so important for us to do that and to just question the information that is automatically fed to us, because that information that is appearing on our feeds is, even if it's accurate, it's only so accurate. It's only one small piece of the picture in most cases. And it is designed to exploit our particular biases or to reinforce our biases and not necessarily to broaden our perspective in ways that can be extremely useful. So seeking out as many perspectives as possible while avoiding propagandists, which like it can be an entire podcast episode on its own. Like, who are the gaslighters? Like, how do you spot somebody who's just like going deep on a subject in a way that's extremely deceptive. But I do feel like we all kind of have a feel for, or we can develop a feel for who are trustworthy voices. And usually it's people who are not speaking in binaries and who are not trying to reinforce your hatred of other people.
I think that's huge. I think that's a great takeaway. Folks who are not speaking in binaries or reinforcing hatred of other people. I think that's a really great summation for how our folks, our listeners, can like navigate misinformation and propaganda online.
Yeah, because I think for Latinas and a lot of us in multi-generational household, we're doing the work for the family, right? It's not just me disseminating information and going through news and what's propaganda and what's misinformation, but it's like, what is my mom seeing on Twitter? What is she seeing on Facebook? And kind of navigating those conversations as well, because we're not just doing it for ourselves. It's also a lot of the time it's for our families.
So true. Yeah. Yeah, the amount of times that my abuelita, or usually it's my abuelita, will send me something and she'll be like, can you believe this is happening? And I'm like, oh no, that's not, that's right. Not happening. And yeah, especially with my dad, because my dad, he has struggled with delusions of persecution and hallucinations. And he's constantly coming to me with YouTube videos and articles from Russian news outlets that are being targeted to him that are preying on his particular paranoias. And I'm just like, oh yeah, as Latinos, we often have to play that role of helping our families navigate this extremely complicated media environment.
100%. While also like not making it about us.
Right.
Right. And I find that, and my grandmother too, and older Catholics, older Latina Catholics in particular, you know, there is a personal, seemingly a personal vested interest in Israel because of everything, you know, especially the religious mm-hmm. connections there. And I think that that's a big piece of it, is like, this is not about us. Yeah. Like this particular mm-hmm. issue really mm-hmm. is not about us and how we feel about Israel. Right. And right. I think a big takeaway for me is like even decentering ourselves. Obviously, we're Latinas here having this conversation, but I think that's like an important takeaway too, you know. And it's interesting to see folks who really are not Israeli, are not Palestinian, are not Jewish, are not Muslim, also having very strong opinions in one direction mm-hmm. or the other, and how that sways things. Like I think a lot of people somehow see themselves as part of the issue when maybe we're not, you know?
Yeah, that's 100% true. Like the amount of self anointed experts on this who've never visited or lived in the region is kind of crazy. So I do think that decentering ourselves is really important, but also recognizing that we do have agency when it comes to protecting people's lives. I think we can condemn the actions of the Israeli government. We can condemn the actions of Hamas, and we can act in response to them and urge our government to do what is right without broadly characterizing Israelis or Palestinians as evil based on the actions of a few specific individuals groups that are in power. I just think it's really important for us to distinguish. And while we're decentering ourselves, also acknowledge that we do have a responsibility as citizens of the United States, where so many resources are being sent to this war. We have a responsibility to act on behalf of life and peace to the extent possible.
And in that spirit and in that vein, a lot of folks have been sharing, you know, call your representative,
exactly.
Call your senators and demand a ceasefire. And that is one thing that we can each do.
Right.
And using that personal and civic and global responsibility as human beings to make the phone call. You know, it's not something we can like vote on right this second.
Right.
But you can get in touch with your representative.
And it makes a difference. They count those calls. I mean, every call does count, as small or as quaint as the action may seem. It really it really does make a difference to make those calls and to talk to your friends and family members about the importance of making those calls.
Yes, I'm going to link in the newsletter and our show notes where you can find your representative if you're in California. And that sometimes is like the first hurdle. You don't know where to find them. You don't know their information. So we're going to link that in the show notes as well. Thank you so much, Jean, for joining us today. I also want to shout out that there's been a long history of Palestinian Latin American solidarity. And so I just want to call that out and also say that we will be producing another episode about this with some more experts that can speak more on this. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Jean, for joining us today. This has been an incredible conversation. You're welcome back anytime. I think we need to talk about propaganda next.
I'd love to. Thank you both. I really enjoyed speaking with you, and you guys are doing great work. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for tuning into another episode of Locatora Radio. We will catch you next time.
Besitos.
Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, is executive produced and hosted by me, Mala Munoz, and Diosa Femme.
Story editing by me, Diosa.
Audio editing by Stephanie Franco.
Thank you to our locamores, our listeners, for all of your support.
With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
What the world needs now is positivity. Connecting, relating, and being human together is where it's at. Hi there, Honey German, and I know life happens, but trust, you got this. And State Farm got us. It feels good knowing that State Farm agents are there to help you choose the right coverage with great support 24/7. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.